I'm here with Andy Middleton, who's the main host of the lectures in terms of comparing. And what have the best bits of the lectures been?
As in previous years, it's been a pretty intense experience. So far, we've heard about 20 speakers. So in 2 days, we've in effect been offered the best contents of 20 awesome books about change. I was saying to someone yesterday, it's a bit like having 20 part-read books by your bedside and going to sleep trying to remember which one said which. And so what I've been doing during each of the talkers is just trying to record my notes on what they've got. So what I'll do is run through some of those things and try and capture an essence of what that's about. Marion Dukas is an illustrator based in London who talked passionately about the value of being messy, about creating space for play and work, recognising that they're not separate things, and the idea that not good enough isn't a good reason to give up doing things.
And that everyone can draw and to enjoy almost the failure of not being able to draw if you're not good enough.
And if we keep doing it, we can really make things happen. Brian Robertson talked about the idea of reshaping organisations to create what we call an exquisite organisation, an organisation that's really designed, fit for purpose. Kicked off with a great story about learning to fly and how he outvoted the flashing light on the dashboard of his plane, nearly crashed the plane as a consequence. I went on from that to talk about the way that humans are sensors in proportion to our organisation's flight, yet most of them are switched off and we're not connecting them. And how do we create organisations where people could work to their full capacity in terms of sensing what's going on? He's crafted a way of working, an approach called holacracy, that's a distributed authority system where with very few group decisions and the governance systems are designed for the organisation to deliver through the people for the purpose that they work there. And really working on this idea about being conscious as sensing the gap between what is and what could be. Really thought-provoking. I mean, difficult to imagine applying it to every organisation, but really exciting. We heard from Robin Sloan over here from the States about how to write. A lovely talk about the relationship between lightness and the way that our lightness with our imagination and our emotion and the lightness of the word and about making things happen. And he talked about the need to notice the friction when we're being creative. If we find friction, if we keep not being able to pick up the pen more than a couple of times, to learn to walk away. And finding the undiscovered words with kids helps us leave fingerprints from the future. And he quoted the Jobs thing about leaving the dent in the universe. And he said, actually, time is the ultimate body shop. Smooths out all of the dents. Tom Herbert lives in southwest England. Tom's a fifth generation baker, and he talked about the way that bread can be so much more than the plastic package white crap that you get in supermarkets, and seeing baking as an act of creation that allows us to prototype different ideas. He shared his sourdough starter with a whole bunch of people in the room and said, aware that the sourdough that this is from is 57 years old, and said if we shared it, it could feed the world. Breaking the bread and talking us through why the loaf is so important and the idea of companion, com with pan, bread. Companionship is about the sharing of bread, literally. There's a lovely thing about the way that bakers sign their own bread because they're community bakeries. You'd make your own dough, but bake it in the community bakery to cite light running your own fire. And then at the end, just invited people who he'd given the sourdough to go away and bake bread and share it with at least two other people. And in that, create an act of giving and knowledge and gift, I guess, in a really simple way that makes a really lovely spark.
I think it was a really special presentation for many reasons. It was a very good performance, but the whole idea of a gift that keeps on giving, of something that grows, and then you can continue to transfer that to other people in the same way that you can transfer companionship or love or support or whatever, I thought was fantastic. One of the things I noticed that's run through a lot of the last 2 days has been the importance of stories and chancing things when you grow a business or when you grow an organisation. And I thought that was quite obvious today, but also came through yesterday. What did you think?
A lot of people talked about the importance of story, a clear story, the chance and recognise that it's okay to keep doing things for 5, 10, 15 years if you know that they're right. And the other strong theme has been this thing about the importance of really putting your heart into what you do, bringing that passion. And if you do that with the right application, with the right craft, good things will happen.
That came across a couple of times, wasn't it? If you do amazing things, then the money will follow or the customers will follow. And staying true to purpose, I thought, was another strong theme that came out.
Two things I think on that is that the sense of scale as well is interesting. So the scale could be Joel making knives and opening his shop 2 days a week, or Mark Koska saving 10 million people's lives through technology, or Tim Smith changing that. So scale, passion, risks and failure, relearn.
You want to front, jump up and get bucked if you're feeling like a Hello, good morning. Alvaro Andoin speaking at Filmatu on Twitter. I am sipping a coffee here with Tim Drake. I was listening to your talk about how to keep your brain young.
Basically, it's about having attitudes and values, which young people have. We tend to get old brain very young, some of us, which is being anxious, grumpy, risk-averse, uncreative, closed down, I'm right, you're wrong, you know, don't tell me about anything, I know everything. Well, some people start getting that sort of attitude to life in their 20s. Some people, on the other hand, can be in their 60s or 70s and still be open and young-brained. And young-brained is about being creative, open to people, open to change, loving life, growing as an individual, understanding that failure isn't failure, it's learning. Young brains see failing as learning, old brains see it as failure as an individual, and there's a big difference in the two. And it's basically an approach to life which makes you more effective because you are plugged into how young people think and you love life as if you were a young person again.
My father, he's 67, and sometimes he tells me, Alvaro, I don't want to meet new people. I'm okay, I'm perfect as I am. And sometimes I think, oh, he doesn't want to keep learning. Yeah. But at the same time, I see that in his own way, he's trying to learn new things. He's always with a book.
I'm 68, so I'm older than your father. But I love meeting people. My wife's the same. We love young people, we love meeting people. And it's terrific. I mean, we guard jealously our old friends, and we value them. But without learning, you can't grow. And if you're not learning and growing, you can't help other people, you can't be effective. You didn't enjoy life very much. You're closing down. And it's very dangerous to start closing down at 67 because, you know, you've got the whole life ahead of you. There's lots of things to do and the future is ours. If you're learning and growing, you're excited, you're finding new things. If you mess up, you mess up, but that's not a problem. You just learn and grow. And we're living in a time of great privilege because there's so much exciting things happening. I think it's a great time to be alive and I want to live for a very long time to see it. One of the things is pattern breaking. So, for instance, sit in a different chair to watch television or eat. Just get outside your comfort zone constantly. Abraham Maslow, the hierarchy of needs, had a great saying, which was, every day we have 1,000 choices between comfort and growth. And most of us choose comfort, not growth. And if you choose growth, it's a far more exciting road to go on because life becomes exciting and engaging again. You want to meet people, you want to find new things, you want to learn new technology. One of the great discriminators between old brains and young brains is that, generally speaking, old people don't like crowds. They feel threatened, they feel anxious. Young people love crowds because they share experience of music at festivals or whatever. It's a profound difference. I think if we can get back to actually enjoy being with other people and sharing experience with them, even just going to see something like the Silver Jubilee or the Olympics, that's a terrific feeling to be in a stadium with other people or a concert or whatever, because that kind of keeps you young, keeps you engaged in life. It's just fabulous. One of the most important lessons in staying young to me is to enjoy fun, to be a bit mischievous, to be a bit naughty, a bit subversive. And that's great. You have a laugh, because without laughing a lot, you're closing down. You're getting defensive, you're getting anxious, you're getting more grumpy, more self-certain that you're right and everybody else is wrong. You've got to stay open, and fun is a very important part of that. You've got to catch those negative things and get rid of them. Negativity is toxic. If you diss people, you're reducing your ability to influence them, to persuade them, for them to trust you. People can smell if they're being dissed by people. And that's the crucial thing. If I suspect that you think I'm a bit of a no-gooder, how can I work with you? It's impossible. You know, it's toxic. Cut out all the negative. And that creates your ability to trust people, to be trusted, and therefore to be more effective as a human being.
We are working with our brains, either writing, uncovering stories, either whatever, being creative. We have to train ourselves. It's like a muscle, I guess.
I couldn't agree more. You've got to constantly rebuild your ability to be effective as a human being, which is about being positive, life-enhancing, and also valuing other people and making them feel you value them. There's no bigger gift you can give to a human being to make them feel you value them.
Tim, I think that phrase that you just said, it's a lot of value, and I really appreciate your words. Looking forward to read your book, whose name was...
The one coming out is How to Make a Difference in September.
Thank you very much for your words and enjoy the two lectures.
Thank you very much indeed. I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
This is Mark Shaler. I took the last couple of sessions, which were really interesting. We had Andy Puddicombe speaking from Get Some Headspace. Andy, at the age of 22, went off to become a monk, where most of us were enjoying time at university or the beginnings of our career. He spent a good few years doing that and then left that to go and do a degree in circus skills. Again, quite an interesting decision. Since then, has spent a lot of time setting up a web service, an app, to help people get more out of meditation. He appreciates that people find it very difficult to meditate, either to sit still or to not flood their brain with things that are irrelevant. And that's not a problem. He says that's okay, and whilst we might have clouds above, above the clouds is blue sky, and we forget that it is there all the time. We just need to get through the clouds. So he talked about the difference between doing nothing and not doing, and how important that difference is. He talked us through his process, which is really simple. 10 minutes a day, 10 days, just to get you into the whole rhythm of meditation. He says something quite interesting, actually. He said, we're very good at going back to check that something still troubles us. But if you've got a toothache, or you'll spend all day prodding it with your tongue just to check that it still hurts. And he talked about this in terms of meditation as well. And when we're trying to get to clarity, we keep going back to our worries to make sure that they're still there. Well, they will be. And so the best way of dealing with it is to not to go back to those things. Now, he was followed by Anna Felton. Anna has been working with the Do Lectures. Anna came to Wales from a kind of hotshot career that she could have had in London doing PR. Now, she started her own brand, Monkstone, which is a wool clothing brand, and is loving it, and has very much focused on sitting that business within the natural environment. So it's run from a farm, so the sheep come straight from the farm. Struggled to find people who could spin and dye within Wales. Finally resolved all of those issues, and now makes beautiful clothing out of wool. And she said she's the sum of parts of many journeys. And she gave us probably the understatement of the day, which was, I'm just a young girl trying to make stuff. And you think, that's a great thing to be. That's not a just. There's no just in there. That's a wonderful thing to be. And she talked about how we need to embed ourselves within our natural environment. Dŵr a than trafod lleiad ma'n lan Ac yn y gola fi dy wallt i ar dan Wel mae'r hael di mynd o môl tu sydd ar hyn Ac ydw nawr dwi'n deall y dim Dwi'n deall i'r dim Ydw nawr dwi'n deall y dim Dwi'n deall i'r dim Ydw nawr dwi'n deall At Do this year, we invited three attendees to talk, and they had about 4 hours' notice, and they had 10 minutes each. And we had Tim Inu talking, and Tim is I think he called himself a YouTube DJ, and he takes video clips and mashes them all together, and that can tell a slightly different story. Very creative, very innovative. He can create different meaning from pulling those clips together, and he showed us some of his work. It was interesting, and it is the future. Also the future was a student called Lydia Slack, who, 21, seemed really nervous, seemed really uncertain. Stood up and delivered the most accomplished presentation, comic presentation about growing up on a hill farm in Derbyshire. She just brought the house down. No one expected this virtuoso performance, and she was amazing. She scurried back to her seat afterwards, not realising that the entire tent was doing a standing ovation. She had to be asked to turn round. And then we had the story of John Ram. John was born blind but didn't realise he was blind until he was 5 when other people at school told him so. And he talked about how it's changed his life and how, I guess as much as anything else, it's changed other people's lives around him, because it really does make you think about using words like, John, oh yeah, the sky's a bit grey today. No point of reference. What does grey mean? It was brilliant. It was a really personal approach to the problems and, more importantly, the great things that he'd done. I think those three presentations made Do so much better to not have the audience participate in. It would have made for an inferior quality day. So I think we'll keep that up. We'll bring people out of the audience and get them to do that. We finished that night with a good old dance-up, and Skritti Politti played. The sweetest girl in all the world. These eyes are for you only. Sweetest girl. Goddard did some more amazing poetry. It was a fantastic way to end a day that had taken us to the highest and to the lowest. Another great Do. So go next year.
Do, protest. Woohoo! And take a stand. Woohoo! Make noise, eruption, make disruption. There be beauty in the underground. Beneath the bluebells in this Welsh valley. Do a big do and call it art. We are the us's. We are the we, the us, the solidarity. The white light is our truth. The white light is our truth, and our weapon is our faith and hope. And this generation is the time of now and here. So protest, do take a stand, make some tap stand.
Even too excited.
That was your word, man. Come on. I love my job. Make some time in this disruption, for here is beauty. In bold heart, art, beating in the underground. Forest green, forest true, all the us's, me and you. The white is pure, the sky is blue. Above the clouds, the sky is blue. The weapon could be pen and page. The weapon could be that this age has learned, will listen and can do. Regeneration. Protest, do, and stand still. Do nothing until your blood pumps your will. Disruption is mess you make with intention. Your intention, I really must mention, your intention for all that hear and hear how sweet it is to be loved.
So it's the last day of the Do Lectures, and the day rounded off with an auction, which was hosted by
Mark Shaler.
You said at the beginning of the auction that they don't make any profit off it, and so the auction helps to pay. Explain a bit more about how all that works.
It's expensive to come, but all of that money covers costs. They make nothing for themselves. There's no surplus that gets taken in. But obviously, it costs money to keep the whole momentum going throughout the year. So the auction is there to provide a little bit of capital to keep everything running. This year was really different. Normally, we raise about £16,000. This year, we raised £30,000, which is astonishing. And as head auctioneer, I take some small part in that. We've split the money this year between Do and a charity called Falling Whistles, which is a guy called Sean Carassa, who went to the Democratic Republic of the Congo on some wild student travelling jaunt and found the whole boy soldiers being given whistles instead of guns and being told to make noise to frighten the enemy. And then when they're shot, because they're there to take the first bullets, being told to try and die in straight lines so they can form a wall. He found it slightly unnerving. He came back frustrated, didn't know what to do, and set up this huge kind of action group, this charity. They don't just raise money and send it, they go and deliver things, they pay for real projects. And he moved everybody, he moved people to tears.
The thing with events like this is that there's quite frequently a lot of hyperbole, but truthfully, I've never seen anything so moving. It's at Falling Whistles, isn't it, on Twitter, and I would urge everybody to look it up. Really amazing, incredible guy. So what's next for Do?
Next year, a bit more fluid, interestingly. It looks like we might be doing some kind of festival. To be confirmed, but to have some kind of Do festival would be astonishing. The thing about Do, and the thing that people don't see it, when they look at the ticket price and they look online and they say, well, I can get the lectures for free. Yes, you can. You can get all the lectures for free online. But what you can't get is you can't get the cement between the bricks. You can't get the conversations and the innovation. You can't get to sit next door to Sean Carasso whilst you're having your tea. You can't get a meditation workshop in the morning. You can't get a run. You can't go Nordic walking. You can't go to see an amazing performance poetry last night, and you can't see Skritti Politti this evening. It's those bits that you don't see, and they're the bits that make it.
And actually, the thing about an amazing event is that it is so hard to articulate and to sum up what it's all about. It's been an incredible event, really. And I'm going to ask you to sum it up, though, in terms of, which is really mean, like what Do means to you.
Do's the single most, it's an awful word, innovative and amazing event. It's where I get all of my inspiration from. Twice a year, it's well worth the £1,500 to get here, because you leave with a head full of ideas that take some filing. You know, you have to defrag when you get back. It means that you pull people who do rather than talk together, and when that happens, incredible connections are made. I've been coming for 3 or 4 years. I spoke last year, and I've attended 2 before, and I'm still in touch with people that I met on the first. And I don't just mean we exchange tweets. We do projects together, and we support each other when we need help. It is the single best event I've ever been to.
Thank you.
It's Sunday morning. I thought I would just say a little bit about my experience of being at the Do Lectures for the last 3 days. The idea of the Do Lectures is to take people from all different walks of life in terms of the things that they do, and to take people who have achieved and are achieving great things in their field and to get them to talk about what they've done and, I suppose, to a degree, how they managed to do it. And it's very difficult to properly articulate and do justice to just what a kind of incredible experience the Do Lectures are. They're very intense. There's so much stuff going on. It's at times, you know, an intense experience. You're completely immersed in it in a good way. And I think it's probably one of the best things I've ever been to. I think I need time to properly process it all, but as well as the speakers, which really are a fantastic kind of eclectic mix of people, as sometimes is the case with these type of things, but not always, you also get the chance to meet a fantastic bunch of people, really, really interesting people who are just doing fantastic stuff. And the problem with trying to describe something like the Do Lectures is that there's only really one word to describe it, and that word's inspirational, but that's such an overused word that it kind of is meaningless these days. But in the true sense of the word, Do Lectures really is inspirational. And I've taken away so much from it, and I need just to kind of process it now. And I think I also probably need a little bit of sleep.